Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Monsoons have flooded parts of India this week, adding to the death toll of a season that has killed more than 1,200 people across South Asia. A building collapse in Mumbai, India, killing at least two people and trapping another 30 after days of flooding rains hit that city. Correspondent Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi.
Rescue workers are trying to pull people out of the rubble. This was a five-story residential building. It was a 117-year-old structure that had already been declared unsafe 6 years ago. So the speculation is that Tuesday's torrential rains further weakened it. It housed about 12 families. It was a huge operation. About 200 rescuers have been at work. They've been hammering at the concrete slabs to rescue those trapped inside.
India's neighbors have also been hit by the monsoon season, which began in June, affected more than 40 million people. Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Nepal have also experienced severe flooding that forced hundreds of thousands of people from their homes. As rescue and recovery from Hurricane Harvey continues in the southeastern region of the U.S. state of Texas, the White House is assuring storm victims that it is not going anywhere and that money to help them will be there. Vice President Mike Pence visited Texas.
When Congress reconvenes next week, the president will be calling on our nation's lawmakers, including all of those gathered here, to take immediate action to pass additional funding for federal disaster assistance for families and businesses affected by this storm.
Storm-related death toll has reached 37. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced by what was Hurricane Harvey. This is VOA News. Even as the southern U.S. states of Texas and Louisiana struggle to recover from Harvey, another powerful storm is gaining strength over the Atlantic and another in the Gulf of Mexico. Irma has intensified to a Category 3 hurricane, appears to be heading toward the Caribbean and the southeastern United States. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Irma is expected to reach the Lesser Antilles by the middle of next week and then toward the U.S. United States is requiring Russia to close its consulate in the U.S. city of San Francisco and two annex buildings located here in Washington and one in New York City. VOA's Bill Gallo has details.
The U.S. State Department said this was in response to the Kremlin's decision to shrink the U.S. diplomatic mission in Russia. State Department spokesman Heather Nauert said in a statement that the U.S. believes the action was unwarranted and detrimental to the overall relationship between the two countries. Last month, Moscow ordered the United States to cut its diplomatic and technical staff in Russia by more than half, to 455 people, after Congress overwhelmingly approved new sanctions against Russia. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
The action by Washington was a move Moscow greeted with regret as relations between the nuclear-armed powers took another dive. At the start of Donald Trump's presidency in January, the Republican leader said he hoped for improved relations with Russian President Vladimir Putin. U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis says he has signed orders to deploy additional American troops to Afghanistan beyond the 11,000 currently serving there. He says the additional troops could mostly advise and enable the Afghan forces to fight more effectively against the Taliban and more than a dozen terror groups in Afghanistan. The secretary said he would provide the public with more information once he has completed the orders and notified Congress next week of the military's next steps. Iraq's prime minister has declared victory over the Islamic State in the city of Tal Afar and the entire province of Nineveh. While the fight for Tal Afar was swift, U.S. Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, the commander of coalition forces fighting Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, says the coalition was planning for tough fights ahead, especially in the Middle Euphrates River Valley, which stretches across 250 kilometers from Deir ez-Zor, Syria, to Rawa, Iraq. Get more news on our website at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, the first day of September, and here are the stories we are covering. Tanzania, Burundi, and the UN Refugee Agency agree to repatriate Burundian refugees.
We're committed to support any refugee that expresses a voluntary request to return. Indeed, what we've discussed here is that this return should be in safety and dignity. And by safety, we mean legal, physical, and material safety.
That's UNHCR Representative Chansa Kapaya. The administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development says aid is in the U.S. national interest. And Zambia's opposition leader is in South Africa and says he was tortured during his incarceration for treason.
He was put there in solitary confinement where there was no bed. He had to sleep on the floor, and sometimes they would come and pour water on that floor for him to sleep. He can't sleep on the floor, so he had to stand most of the time.
Charles Kokoma, a spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. We have reaction from the Zambian government. And Uganda prioritizes some products to reduce trade deficit. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports in our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tanzania, Burundi, and the UN Refugee Agency announced Thursday that they have reached an agreement to repatriate Burundian refugees who want to go home. Tanzania has been impatient to get the process started, and all parties now say they will work to facilitate the safe and dignified return of the refugees beginning early September. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi with reporting by Khalid Abubakar Famil in Dar es Salaam.
Tanzania's president has faced criticism since he publicly urged Burundian refugees to go home last month. Tanzania hosts more than 350,000 refugees from neighboring countries. More than two-thirds of them are from Burundi. Tanzania's Minister for Home Affairs, Mwigulu Nchemba, insists no refugees will be forced out of the country.
These people have decided in their own. To us as stakeholders and as governing bodies, we are only trying our level best to make sure that we facilitate, and it is provided.
The Ministry of Home Affairs says it has registered 11,000 Burundians for voluntary repatriation, but the process has been delayed. The Burundian government has complained that returns have so far been chaotic and informal. Officials from the two countries met with the UN Refugee Agency Thursday in Dar es Salaam. UNHCR Representative Chansa Kapaya.
We're committed to support any refugee that expresses a voluntary request to return. Indeed, what we've discussed here is that this return should be in safety and dignity. And by safety, we mean legal, physical, and material safety. The political dialogues are still taking place. They haven't been concluded. But the government of Burundi here has assured everyone that returnees will be afforded that physical security.
Burundi has been in turmoil since 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a third term in office, an idea his opponents said violated the constitution and the accord that ended Burundi's civil war. Human rights groups say the past 2 years have seen unrest, political assassinations, and attacks on civilians. Tanzania and Uganda have tried to bring the government and the opposition together, but the peace talks have failed due to disputes over who should attend on each side. Vital Nshirimana is the head of Burundi's Forum for Strengthening the Civil Society.
Tanzania should not be fooled, should not be misled. As a civil society, what we think is to, first of all, solve the ongoing conflict, to put an end to the ongoing violence, and then refugees will be able to return back to their motherland when they will know that they will no longer be persecuted by the Imbonerakure militiamen.
Imbonerakure is the youth wing of Burundi's ruling political party. The youth group is accused of attacking opponents and civilians. Aid agencies see another trend at work in Tanzania's readiness to help repatriate refugees. This trend emerging as the world's poorest countries host the bulk of the world's displaced. 84% of people displaced at the end of 2016 were in developing nations. The process to repatriate the first Burundians from Tanzania is expected to begin September 7th. Burundi says it will open reception centers to receive its citizens. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The administrator of the United States Agency for International Development says aid is in U.S. economic and security interest. Mark Green also said aid is a projection of American values. He was in Ethiopia this week and paid a visit to Jijiga town, the worst drought-affected part of the Somali region. In this interview with VOA Horn of Africa stringer Eskenda Fru and other reporters, Green said he was in Ethiopia to see the good work that the group Feed the Future is doing to combat hunger and poverty.
Truth be told, the real reason that I wanted to come here was to see Feed the Future in action. You know, when I was ambassador, we didn't have Feed the Future. And one of my great frustrations as an ambassador in Tanzania, there was tremendous need. I had no tools. I didn't have the kinds of tools that Feed the Future brings. So it was a chance to see with my own two eyes how this partnership that we call Feed the Future is not only helping to deal with immediate needs and immediate food insecurity, but looking for ways to strengthen people against future shock so that they are better able to withstand natural disaster and crisis in the future. Ethiopia is a particularly good place for that, because while they have drought and they have challenges, they are much better off than they were just a few years ago in the last drought. So this is a place where we see some of the benefits and the potential from Feed the Future. Again, I think Feed the Future itself as an approach is not simply humanitarian response. Humanitarian response is important, but we all understand that you want to help people protect themselves and to be strengthened against the potential for future shock and crisis. And it's a sad reality, Ethiopia seems to get those shocks every few years, not just once in a generation. And so I think what we're doing here, these sorts of facilities which create better livelihoods, but also some of the partnerships we're putting together, including the American business community, agribusiness community, is a very smart way of tackling food insecurity.
Could you just talk briefly on why is this a good investment for America?
For lots of reasons. Number one, it is in our national security interest. We know that instability and despair are conditions that bad guys too often know how to exploit. Secondly, it's in our economic interest. We want markets. We want partners. We want people who are consumers. We want people who want to buy stuff that we make. It's in that interest. And also, I think it's a projection of American values. And in the case of Feed the Future, it's not only the compassion of responding to hunger, but it's also this sense of helping people help themselves. Ethiopia is a perfect sort of capsulized version of all of it, because they have been struck, unfortunately, often by drought and food insecurity. Secondly, Feed the Future's definitely had success here.
Mark Green is the administrator of the United States Agency for International Development. He was speaking from Ethiopia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, the first day of September. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Zambia's main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, is in South Africa to seek medical attention following his release from months of incarceration for treason, according to the party spokesman. But on Thursday, Hichilema held a joint news conference with South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance leader, Motsi Maimane. Hichilema thanked Maimane for supporting him during his imprisonment. He said he was tortured and was put in a police cell full of feces. Hichilema says there is no freedom of speech in Zambia and the country suffers from a breakdown of the rule of law. Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the United Party for National Development, UPND, said Hichilema gave an accurate account of Zambian prisons.
This is a story that should continue to be told and told over and over again, because it depicts the injustice that is happening in Zambia and also in the Zambian prison. When he describes that, it is actually resonating with the conditions in other prisons in other African countries. For example, when he was put in solitary confinement, not even in a recognized police cell or prison, he was at a military camp, a police military camp called the Lilai in Lusaka. There's no recognized police station there. But he was put there in solitary confinement where there was no bed. He had to sleep on the floor, and sometimes they would come and pour water on that floor for him to sleep. He can't sleep on the floor, so he had to stand most of the time. So basically, he was describing the cruelty of what goes on in these cells or prisons. The idea is that when we identify the problem, then we can be able to say, now what do we do to solve these problems that political detainees, for that matter, are going through.
I'm sure the Zambian government has a different answer when it comes to the entrenchment of democracy in Zambia. But Mr. Hichilema seems to suggest here that in Zambia, citizens cannot fully stand to talk and say things. There's a breakdown of law and order, he said. People from his party particularly are being maimed for wearing our regalia, he says. Is it really true what he's describing here?
That is correct, very true. In fact, some of the people that have had their freedoms of speech impinged on have been arrested and are appearing before the court of law. One of them is a president of an opposition political party. His name is Mr. Chilufya Tayari, for criticizing the police for what they did to Hakainde Hichilema. He was also arrested and said he defamed the police inspector general. And there are so many cases of that nature, including a university student who criticized the president on social media. He has also been arrested.
When we talked last on the day he was released, you told us that Mr. Hichilema was going to give a news conference in a few days after his release. That news conference, we probably want to know whether he's going to give it, because today he said that Zambia needs an independent electoral commission if democracy is to be resuscitated. Is that one of his points that he would like to champion now?
Yes, there are so many things that need to be corrected in our country. One of them, of course, the need for an independent electoral commission. The electoral commission that we have now is full of commissioners that are appointed by the president, and therefore they owe their allegiance to the appointing authority.
Charles Kakoma is spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. You're speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu.
There is no government that has done more for prison reform than the Zambian government. So the deplorable conditions he found there are applicable to all the 20,000 prisoners.
For political prisoners like him, prison authorities are very careful how they treat to establish the charges. They want to make sure that they are not sent to crowded prisons before the charges are confirmed or not. There is no one prisoner who faces worse condition than the other prisoner. All the 20,000 prisoners, that's a prisoner population in this country. There is 20,000 of them, and they all face the same conditions. The government is not satisfied about the conditions in prison. It's doing a lot for prison reform and doing a lot to ensure that prisoners endure their life sentences, their term prison sentences in the conditions as humane as possible.
I would like for you to answer what Mr. Hichilema said, and that is in Zambia today, there's a lack of freedom of speech. He also mentioned the breakdown of the rule of law, and also that people from his UPND party are constantly maimed either for wearing their party regalia. The media in Zambia is not safe, he said.
The worst violence deployed against any other supporters of a political party other than his, is that violence which was deployed
against people suspected to be supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front. They deployed so much violence. They speared people. They used machetes. They burnt down houses of people who they believe supported the PF in Namwala, in his stronghold. There is evidence, yeah. In fact, one Zambian lawyer has complained against Mr. Hichilema to the International Criminal Court in Namwala, in Monze, and some towns where he was winning by 70, 80, 90%. Ask Mr. Kakoma. People were speared. The United Nations has taken that camps for the disaster management unit were set up because people were distressed. So the worst form of electoral violence against any section of people on political lines is that which was deployed by the UPND. With regard to freedom of expression, he talks on radio every day. If he decided that he was going to speak in South Africa, it's because that's where the financial backers are. He was simply seeking refuge in comfort zone. He was speaking there not because he can't speak here. Every single day since he came out of prison, even before he left, he's been speaking in the media.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Ugandan government says it is going to prioritize some exports to reduce its trade deficit. Amelia Chambadi, Uganda's Minister of Trade, says the government will increase the production of some export products. But one analyst says in order for Uganda to reduce its trade deficit, it must increase its exports and also reduce internal spending as well as add value to its goods. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Chambadi says Uganda's trade deficit for 2016-2017 fiscal year was $220 million. She says the government will invest in its exports, mainly agricultural products such as coffee, sugar, floriculture, tobacco, tea, as well as steel products, fish and cement. She says the government will invest at least 2.7 billion Ugandan shillings, or about $1 million over a five-year period to help farmers and processors.
We intend to set up an export development fund to be managed by Uganda Development Bank Limited. And this fund shall focus on financing export-oriented initiatives at sector and enterprise level for the priority products and also services, with all activities along the entire value chains eligible for financing.
This investment is projected to increase the country's export earnings from the current $2 billion to over $8 billion by the year 2021. Minister Chambadi insists Uganda's investment in these products will increase export by 40%. Last year, coffee was Uganda's top export, worth more than $400 million, according to the data from Uganda Bureau of Statistics.
We propose that more land should be converted to agricultural production, and we appeal to the private sector and the farmers to ensure that they focus on products that are either high priority or medium. But of course, they need our guidance. We need to step up our research in some of these commodities and step up distribution of quality seeds, seedlings, and fertilizers.
Another initiative that Chambadi believes will reduce the trade deficit is Buy Uganda, Build Uganda Obubu, where the government encourages Ugandans to consume homemade products. However, Dr. Chirabo Cheyune, a professor of economics at Kampala International University, says depending on agriculture may not be enough.
Well, this will work, but it will not be sufficient in my view. Why I'm saying this is because the economy has to play within the SDGs, because we already have sustainability development goals that are being pursued. It is prioritizing that because agriculture is ideally the mainstay of the economy. But at the same time, there are strides being made on the side of industrialization, which to me I feel would now boost on the quality of what we are selling out.
Cheyune also says that agriculture in Uganda may easily be affected by natural disasters such as droughts. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
A very good morning to you, James. We begin with the results and reviews of qualifying matches for the 2018 Russia World Cup campaign scheduled for this weekend. On Thursday, Uganda moved to the top of Group E in Africa's 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign with a shocking 1-0 win over Egypt. It was Uganda's first win over Egypt in 52 years. The Cranes of Uganda interim coach Moses Basena says they are still cautious of their next game and do not want to be distracted by Thursday's victory.
I've tried to do everything within our means to try to get the best of our players to be at their best mentally, physically and psychologically, so that we are able to encounter the Falaos, as they are called.
In a later game on Thursday in Group A, Guinea beat Libya 3-2 with a 93rd-minute winner. Ghana, who have a single point, play their third qualifier against visiting pointless Congo-Brazzaville later today. Captain of the Black Stars, Asamoah Gyan, says the game against Congo-Brazzaville is a must win.
It's quite difficult. You know, we drew at home, we lost away, and it is the third game. You know, the expectations are high. Uganda won today against Egypt. You know, the group is open now. You know, so what we have to do is keep our composure and then make sure we carry the day tomorrow, and then we think about the next game.
In what appears to be the crunch game of the weekend, Group B leaders, the Super Eagles, will be heading up with their 6 points lead from two matches against the indomitable Lions of Cameroon. Captain of the Super Eagles, Mikel Obi, says his teammates are hoping to secure their spot in Russia when they host the reigning African champions in Uyo later this evening.
I'm sure the players all know that is the most important thing. And I always speak to some of them and always try to make them know how important it is to represent this country and how important it is to go to the World Cup or Nations Cup.
In the meantime, the Nigerian Football Federation has confirmed that Hull City defender Ola Aina wouldn't play any part in the World Cup qualifier later today. This is because the football house is yet to get the green light on the clearance of the player to switch allegiance from England to Nigeria. NFF President Amaju Pinnick explains why.
But he's a fantastic player, like every other member of that team. We're happy he has been able to identify with the Nigerian team, and he'll be part of the team integrally because he's very young and very athletic and indeed very patriotic as well.
The Cameroonian coach Hugo Broad says the Indomitable Lions, having played at the Confederation Cup in Russia, is more experienced than the Super Eagles of Nigeria. He breaks down how his team plans to win the Super Eagles.
First of all, a very difficult game because we are playing against a very good opponent. They started very well in the elimination games of for World Cup, so two times a victory. We didn't do it. So first of all, we have the opponent. Secondly, we have the situation.
In other games slated for this weekend, Zambia will face Algeria in the other Group B crucial back-to-back 2018 FIFA World Cup Russia Group B qualifier. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Had a tough week? Need to relax or recharge? Well, this Sunday, let me deliver the perfect elixir straight to your ears. African music. I also bring you two interviews from East and West Africa. From Nairobi, meet girl group Band Becca. And from Accra, discover singer-songwriter Erlie. So tune in this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Relax, recharge, rock out on Music Time in Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.